Welcome back to the interweb, guys. Today's story is going to be about the Gainesville Ripper. I have Mr.
Malik, or King Maze, whatever you might want to call me.
Are you doing okay over there?
Yes, yeah. I am. I got two little hellions over here, but, you know, I'm doing fine.
Fine and dandy. Alrighty, guys, my name is Jess. I'm going to be the host for today and for the rest of this podcast life. We do have a live studio audience today. Do you guys want to say hello?
Hey.
Oh, what's good?
They're all right there. So cute. Alrighty, so we're going to start off with Danny Rowling's timeline. I feel like the best place to start is with the Samba bitch that did the worst shit possible. I do want to give a listener discretion to start off with. Today's story contains a lot of messed up stuff. Like, oh my god. It contains violence against women, mutilation of a corpse, shmoida, as we like to call it. It also involves rape. And sodomy. Just gotta get it all in there. Apparently. Sorry, I'm not laughing because I think this is funny. I'm laughing because it's so fucked up. I cannot believe someone could actually do this.
Is it sodomy of a corpse or of a human person? Living person?
You'll find out. You will find out. And it's not going to be fun.
I hate being kept in the dark.
It's okay. We'll be fine. We got this, okay? So, like I said, listener discretion is advised because, oh my God. But let's get started. Our story starts in 1953. This is when James and Claudia met and got pregnant and married, but James did not know about the pregnancy until 2 weeks after they had gotten married, which prompted him to beat his wife.
Okay. So we got a punk and a wife who gets beaten.
Yeah.
I feel bad.
Yeah. Not too long after this happened, on May 26, 1954, Danny Rowling was born in Shreveport, Louisiana. And according to his mom, it was a pretty difficult delivery. It doesn't specifically say what happened to cause it to be a difficult delivery, but, you know, that's what was said. A little bit over a year later, his baby brother, Kevin, was born, and that was on August 15th, 1955. 2 months after Kevin had been born, the dad was upset at Danny for crawling in a very cute and adorable way, I might say so myself. But he was crawling in, like, he was sitting down on his bottom, and he would use his legs to, like, propel himself either forwards or backwards. And his dad did not like that for shit. His dad was expecting Danny to crawl like a normal baby would, which is, you know, hands and knees. And because he was pissed, he proceeded to beat the ever-living shit out of Danny.
You got anything to say about?
Where's his grave at?
I don't know. I decided not to search up any more about that piece of shit. Because
I got a fat one that I want to put on his grave.
A fat one? Yeah. Are you talking about poop?
Yes.
Poop!
I got a fat one that I'm ready to release and put on his grave.
Oh my god. Well, while you are getting enough fiber in you, I'm going to keep telling you the story, okay? So get that fiber in you and I will find out where his grave is at. Okay? Alrighty. When Danny was only 4 years old, his mom decided to leave James for the very first time. And she left for 6 months. And James begged and begged and begged, "Baby, I'm sorry. I'll be good to you from now on." And she fell for it and came running back, unfortunately. At this point, James had found a puppy and brought it home for the boys. And Danny ended up falling in love with this puppy. Like, his dad would beat his mom constantly. Never beat Kevin, but started to taunt Danny and call him names like the F slur and pansy and just really degrading stuff for a 5-year-old to have to be hearing. And so the puppy was his only release in a way. He felt like he could talk to the puppy and, you know, like the puppy was never going to leave him. And because James saw that Danny was getting super, super close to the puppy, he ended up beating the puppy and it died. Now, I do want to say before we continue, I did mess up in last week's podcast. I got Clarence Ray Allen's dad confused with Danny Rowling's dad. So I do want to go ahead and let you guys know it was Danny's dad that was a policeman and ended up going to the Korean War, not the other bits. So now that I've gotten my conscience clear, I can keep going. So that happened, and it was pretty traumatizing for Danny. He did later talk about it, and it was horrendous. In 1962, Claudia left James once again. This was on Christmas Day because he essentially used her as a punching bag again. And she was fed up with it. But before she left, she did pack up the kids' Christmas presents. And so the kids still kind of got to have, you know, the presents. In 63, Danny was only 9 and his mom had a mental breakdown. They didn't really specify what it was that she had, but some people have later come out to say, including herself, that schizophrenia runs in the family. So it could have done, it could have been something like that. And the weirdest part is that both of the perpetrators in this story have hereditary schizophrenia. So Danny had it, and the other dude that ended up not having anything to do with the crime might have had it too. She did have a mental breakdown, and she ended up being hospitalized for a little bit, so it's not difficult to conclude that maybe James was being a terrorist to his children. At the age of 10, Danny had failed the third grade for the third time, and Claudia was super scared of letting James know. So again, in 64, she ended up leaving him but came back, and she would do this a total of 6 times during Danny's childhood. And around the age of 11, Danny walked in on his mom and his dad not doing the nasty, but they were having an argument which caused his mom to slit her wrist and tried to commit suicide right in front of Danny. What's going on, baby? You have a look on your face that's just like, what's going on? No
comment.
By the way, to our live studio audience, I am so sorry that you guys just witnessed me poking my nose. So around the age of 12, this was in August 66, Danny got beat by his dad for not getting a haircut for school. And I would like to also, what's going on?
I got a haircut because my dad was jealous that I had hair and he didn't. But this child got beat for not getting a haircut. Okay, continue.
This was also the age when he started going into the woods to masturbate to satanic thoughts.
Danny?
Danny.
The dad.
James is a dad. Danny is the killer. Danny would go into the forest, well, into the woods to be exact, to fantasize about torture and to tickle his little pickle to satanic thoughts.
Continue. Okay.
Continue. Yeah. I do also want to mention that at this point, when Danny was only 12 years old, two of his future victims were taking their first breath. They were born on September 14th. That was one of the, that was the male victim. And then the one of the female victims, she was born on October 4th, 1966. So while he was dreaming about bad shit, two lovely humans that would have grown up to be amazing humans were being born. Now, keeping on with the story about Danny. So, when he was 14, he saw a naked girl for the first time. This was in 68. And he immediately, when, you know, his little pickle decided to, you know, he looks like he just cannot understand what I'm trying to say, but he understands exactly what I'm saying.
Those are some nice blinds right there.
Okay.
Some very nice blinds right there.
I cannot. Okay, going back. Christmas of 1969, Danny received his guitar, and that is when he found his first love, which was the love for music. Some people say that he could have been a country artist had he not decided to be such a little BPS bits, but you know, to each their own. I've heard some of his music and I'm not impressed. Just saying. And no, I will not force you guys to listen to that on this podcast. But if you guys want to listen to it, you guys can find it on YouTube. I will list all of these links down below. Let's keep on going.
I'd rather listen to Rebecca Black's Friday on repeat for the next 5 years of my life with earphones glued, super glued into my ears. Then listen to that.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Listen to it.
We have someone over here saying that they're going to go listen to it right now. Isn't that right, Mr. Tyler?
No, that was a Zeke. That was Zeke.
Oh, where is he?
He's not in there yet.
Oh, he's not on the video?
No.
Okay. Well, let's keep going with the timeline. What happened?
He said, what was his name?
His name is Tyler.
No, what was the guy's name? Danny Rowling.
Danny Rowling. Alrighty. Around 15 is when he got his first job. But he was later forced to quit the job by his dad, because he did not like the fact that he was working at a fast food restaurant. He was working for Dairy Queen.
They make some bomb blizzards, but I'm lactose intolerant, and I hate that.
Yeah.
Good things in life.
The good things in life. So in February 17, 1971, Danny started to hurt animals. He was 17 at this point. And he had also at this point been caught drinking by his dad, and his dad threw him in jail for a full week for it. This would happen one more time, by the way. Are you holding the puppy because the story is just too intense already?
No, he hurt animals.
No, he's not going to hurt any of our puppies. Our puppies are safe, I promise you. Yes, but he started to hurt animals at the age of 17. He started becoming a hardcore peeping Tom. At first, it was because he kind of wanted to know what a good family unit would be like, you know, the nuclear family. But after he saw the naked girl for the first time, he started peeping for, you know, the girls. And one of the dads saw him, called James, and James beat him right in front of the people that he was peeping on. Which, I don't know how I feel about, he was peeping on someone. He was only like 7, I don't know. He was at an age where, just buy magazines. I'm pretty sure they had magazines. You don't have to be staring at people. You're about to be 18, dude. And this girl was 14. Just buy it. Am I wrong for thinking that way?
No, you're not.
So at this point, Danny had already dropped out of high school. He was I guess because of the beatings, like, they do say that if you constantly hit your head as a child, you do have a tendency to be more aggressive later. I don't know if stupidity is also a part of it, but he dropped out of high school and he immediately went into the Air Force. He tried either the Marines or the, which one was it?
Coast Guard?
One of the two. He had tried one of the two first, and he was not accepted. And then he went for the Air Force, and he got in.
Okay. I have a question. How is it that this man tried for the Marines, didn't get accepted in it, but he tried for the Air Force, which you have to get a higher grade, a higher score in order to get in, but he got in the Air Force.
He didn't stay in there for long. He was caught doing acid more than 100 times while he was in the Air Force. He was caught smoking marijuana, and he was also caught drinking. And for some reason, I don't know why, don't ask me. I think maybe it's because hashtag white privilege. He got honorably discharged after being diagnosed with BPD. Now, if I don't know a whole lot about BPD because it is a mental illness that, although a lot of people suffer from it, roughly 3 million people in the United States alone suffer from BPD. It's not very widely known about or researched because it often gets confused with being manic depressed or having PTSD. And for the most part, it can only be treated with symptoms, and things that are some of the symptoms are being slightly depressed, lack of sleep, lack of appetite, having an overabundance of appetite. Like, all of those little things come together, and it can't be diagnosed with like random things, like you have to have psychiatric treatment for a while. They need to talk to your friends and family to see what your behavior is like, and then you can either go into medication or take therapy for it, or even take psychotherapy for it. You can even get hypnotized, is what I've read, but I don't really believe it. And I saw the look you made, so I know you're a skeptic too.
Continue.
Okay. I do also want to mention that at this point, in 71 and 72, the three other victims that would become his future victims were being born, along with, oh my God, this child, I cannot, but let's keep going. This brings us to when he's 21 years old. When he's 20, he found God after he had been discharged from the Air Force. He found God, and he ended up marrying this beautiful petite brunette woman by the name of Omatha Ann Halko.
Omatha and Halko?
Ann.
Oh, okay.
Omatha Ann.
Okay.
A-N-N, Ann.
Okay.
Yeah. They did have a daughter by the name of Kylie Danielle. And Danny just couldn't handle it. He was working two jobs at this point, and he was trying his hardest to not go back to the drugs. But, of course, he ended up abusing the drugs again. So, in 77... after about six robberies, one accidental death, and multiple rapes that he perpetuated on others, his wife left him and literally screwed him over by taking everything from him, including his daughter. And he did beat her once, because she was talking to a friend who happened to be an ex-boyfriend. She did later end up marrying that ex-boyfriend, and he ended up adopting his daughter. That's going to move us up to 89. I know I'm skipping a couple of years, but I'm trying to make sure that it keeps, you know, flowing a little bit. So in 89, after serving in jail for eight different robberies, he came back to Shreveport, Louisiana, where he started working at a mom-and-pop type restaurant, and he ended up getting fired on November 3rd of 1989 from that restaurant, and later on November 4th of 1989, it is believed that he was the one that murdered three people. And he ended up fleeing. So he murdered three people, allegedly. And he ended up fleeing to Gainesville, Florida. He rented a room when he got to Gainesville, but he mostly just pitched a tent in the woods and stayed there. It was really weird because he clearly had enough money for it, but he still chose to stay in the woods. Now, it is said that he stayed in the woods because it made it easier for him to stalk his victims. But yeah, so, oh dear Lord. We're going to start getting into the actual things that he did, and I don't know how I feel about it yet. I've cried too much about these people, but let's just get into it. So on August 24th, 1990, he went into a Walmart along with his first two victims, 17-year-old Christina Powell and 18-year-old Sonia Larson. They were both at a Walmart. They were picking out stuff for their new apartment. They had rented an apartment at, I think it's called the, I forgot the name of it, but let's keep going. So they went to Walmart, and they were picking out little things, and he started following them a couple of aisles behind where he was gathering essentially the things that he was going to use to murder them. He stole duct tape. He stole some screwdrivers, some gloves, and an ice pick. He stole an ice pick as well. He then proceeded to go into the woods and wait for them to get back. Christina was downstairs on the couch reading a book, doing some homework, and because it was such a nice night out, they decided to leave the door open with the screen closed, and he noticed that she ended up falling asleep, and her roommate was upstairs in her bedroom asleep as well. So he noticed that the doors were open, and he snuck in and looked on the couch, saw Christina right there, did not wake her up, went upstairs and found Sonia, and he had a K-bar knife. I think that's what it's called. Do you know what they are?
Yeah, they're the knives that you get standard issued in the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he had one of those, and he stabbed her directly in the chest, which prompted her to wake up. It was later mentioned that someone did hear her scream, but he immediately put a piece of duct tape over her mouth and proceeded to stab her. Now, I do have a couple of pictures that it was really difficult to get these because they released them, but then they took them back, the autopsy reports. So now you have to request them, and it does take 90 days. And obviously, I do not have 90 days. So I'm going to show them to you right now. This is the only picture that I was able to get for Sonia Larson, our very first victim. But she was posed upstairs. It's not in here now. Yeah, it's not in here. Well, looks like you don't get to see that one. But she was stabbed. She was raped, flipped to her back, stabbed in the back 3 times, and then she was stabbed in the chest and in her arms and on her neck. She was only conscious for about a minute before she died, and then he turned her around again and posed her. After that, he had sex with her one more time. Yeah. He then went downstairs and put a piece of tape over Christina's mouth and immediately put her hands above her head and duct taped them as well. He grabbed the K-bar knife and ripped her shirt off of her, slicing from the bottom all the way up to her neck, and then slicing it from arm to arm to get it off of her, and proceeded to fondle her and ripped off the tape and forced her to perform oral sex on him before turning her around and stabbing her 3 times in the back. Then he proceeded to flip her back over, and he ended up posing her, legs open and arms above her head in the most provocative way that he could think of. That's how he decided to pose her. After that, he went into the kitchen and cleaned off his little pickle. And this little idiot left the napkins on the counter. He then grabbed a bottle of dish soap with a paper, with a towel. And he proceeded to clean Christina and Sonia's bodies. And that's when he reflipped Sonia and sodomized her. And then flipped her back around, pushed her off of the bed so that her legs were hanging off of the bed, spread wide open, and he fanned her hair out. So he, like, essentially made it look like she was still being, you know. He left the house, left them there. And less than 42 hours later, he was in Krista Hoyt's apartment. She was set to go to work around midnight, but she ended up not showing up, which kind of prompted her coworkers to freak out a little bit, because even the day beforehand, on a Thursday, she had gotten to go get her wisdom teeth removed, and she still went into work. And, I mean, I don't know what having your wisdom teeth taken out feels like, but I don't think it would be fun.
It's not. It sucks.
The best way I can describe it is basically, like, you're not supposed to go to work part because of the swelling, and you're on so many painkillers that you feel like you're high.
Yeah.
Oh, damn. And this girl still went to work. Now, she worked at the Alachua Sheriff's Office. I'm sorry. So, you know, she was always on time.
She was a trooper.
She was a trooper. She really was. And, I mean, these girls were super, super sweet. Like, it is said that... Let's go back a little bit because I do want to talk about them. So, Christina and Sonia had met the year prior while they were still in school, and they went to the University of Florida for the summer session, and that's when they had, like, officially decided to become roommates. And because there wasn't any dorms left in the school, they got an apartment that was about 4 blocks away from the school. So that's how they met. They were both softball players. One of them wanted to be a teacher. The other one wanted to be an architect. And they were just the cutest thing in the world. They were both honor students. And Christina was the one that was a Bible study counselor. So she was super religious, but not like in-your-face religious, just religious, if you know what I mean. And with Krista, she was just the cutest little thing in the world. She was the oldest, I believe, and she wanted to go to school for law and to become an FBI agent later. So, you know, they had the whole world in front of them. He unfortunately snuffed it right out of them. He did wait for Krista. He stalked her 2 days prior, kind of learned her routine, knew that she worked late and that she wouldn't be home until pretty early in the morning, around 11, 10 a.m. So after she left, he came back inside, and this was, I believe this was August 25th. Yeah, because the first girls died August 24th, and she was killed. Yeah, she was killed the next day in the morning. So he waited for her in her house throughout the entire night. And when she got back home at 11 a.m., he came up from behind her, put her in a chokehold, and essentially knocked her out. She did try to scream, and later neighbors also claimed to have heard her yell, but they weren't necessarily sure what was going on, so they just kind of left it alone. Now, if you guys are out there and if you guys hear anybody yelling, please do something about it. Don't be a little bitch and, like, you could save a person's life. Just gonna go ahead and say it. He dragged her into her room and ripped off her clothes the same way that he had done it to Christina, and proceeded to sexually assault her. He ended up raping her, and he flipped her over, stabbed her in the back 3 times, and he ended up rupturing her, I think it was her aorta, that's what they called it.
Yeah.
He then left her alone. She literally just bled out and died. A couple of hours later, he thought he had forgotten his wallet, so he came back and he cut her from her sternum all the way down to her pelvic bone, essentially gutting her. And then he posed her. He posed her on the bed, sitting upright with her body just slightly hunched over. And he unfortunately did not stop there. He proceeded to behead her. And he went to the living room, brought a bookshelf into her room, placed her head on top of the bookshelf, and faced it towards the body. A couple of days later, on Wednesday, August 27th, he broke into the house. I'm sorry. This one was really bad. That last one was really bad. He ended up breaking into Tracy and Manny's apartment. These were two really, really close friends. They had gone to the same high school. Tracy was a homecoming queen. She also wanted to study law. And there's later an interview that I had seen about her and her sister, where her sister had talked about how during her wedding, Tracy and the sister were dancing, and there's a video of them dancing out there. You guys should also see it. All of these documentaries that I'm talking about are on the Discovery Plus app, in case you guys wanted to know. They are both on the Gainesville Ripper. One of them is from Cold Blooded, and then the other one is FBI Investigates or something like that. But Tracy and her sister love to dance, and so there's a clip in there, and it's the cutest thing in the world. And yeah, they were not dating, by the way. I don't want you guys to think that, but they did very much love each other in, like, that brother sister type of way. And yeah, they decided to live together, and it is reported that about 2 hours before they were brutally murdered, Tracy was on the phone with her best friend talking about the murders, and Tracy said, well, I feel safe because I have Manny here. Like, if anything is to happen, Manny's gonna protect me. But little did she know that Danny Rowling was going to use a screwdriver to pry open her sliding back door the same way that he did it with Krista Hoyt, and he was going to climb upstairs to Manny's room. And it was almost like a blitz attack type thing, where he plunged the knife directly into his chest, and it literally went all the way through. Like, when the cops moved his body over, there was a hole in his back, but there was also a hole on his bed from where he got stabbed. Now, Manny was a football player. He was 6'2", over 200 pounds. He was a football player. And he immediately got up, and even with like that knife still plunged in him, he grabbed Danny, put him in a chokehold, and Danny later said that Manny almost took him down, but he was able to get the knife out of him, and he proceeded to stab him in the arms, in his neck, on his leg, on his knee, and he stabbed him over 30 times. Over 30 times, and that's when finally Manny ended up dying. And before he died, he did yell at Tracy, "Run, run and get help." And Tracy was just getting out of the shower, so she was kind of like, "What the hell's going on?" This was around 2 a.m. You know how we are. It's 2 a.m. right now, and we're still not asleep. So obviously, like, we can't fault them for this. But she ended up going towards Manny's room, saw Danny, and I guess she was upstairs, and there was no way that she could have gotten to her downstairs door, and there was probably no other way around. And you guys have to remember, this is in the 90s, so there was no cell phones back then. They just had these big fucking block thingies, and sometimes it didn't even have any cell service, and the only people that actually had cell phones were like the rich people, and I guess these were kind of like rich people, but not really, more like middle class. But she ran back into her bedroom and tried to like barricade the door so that Danny couldn't get in there, and she wouldn't be in the story if unfortunately this hadn't happened. But he broke down the door and looked at her, and he said that she said, but it's a he said she said type thing. It is said that she asked him, "You're the one, aren't you?" And that he repeated by saying, "Yeah, I'm the one." But because it sounds very Hollywood, I don't really think that it happened. You know what I mean?
All I gotta say is her brother is like, when I say this, I mean it with all due respect. Her brother is a demon. Her brother fought with every single bit of life that he had in him. To take 30 stab wounds and not go down.
For a while. The whole ordeal lasted 10 minutes.
You got it. 50 Cent got shot 8 times and didn't die. This man got stabbed 30 times.
Yeah.
And didn't die yet. But continue.
Okay. So, after Manny died, after Tracy tried to save herself and failed, unfortunately, he proceeded to stab her again right in the chest just to kind of get her down. He then raped her, flipped her over again. I don't know if it's like a thing where he doesn't want to see. Like, I mean, he's a coward in my point of view, regardless of it. But I don't know if he's that cowardly that he just can't face the fact that these women.
It's a thing with serial killers and serial rapists. They have to follow a certain, it's like with people with ADHD, they have to do things a certain way in order to feel, not ADHD, OCD. They have to do things a certain way or a certain amount of times in order to feel like they've done it. Mm-hmm. Right. So, like, an example, Kevin, he used to come back to the house three times.
Three times?
Three times. In order to check the garage door.
Really?
To make sure it was closed. There's another person that I know that would... they would have to snap their fingers six times before leaving their house.
You know, but I wonder if this is more like a psychological thing for him. As in, like... not necessarily, like, OCD, but... he can't... he wants to murder these people... but he doesn't want to be looking them in the eyes as he's doing it.
Well, you said that he raped her when he stabbed her in the chest.
Yeah.
So, in all of them, he's done that. He's raped them after he stabbed them in the chest. So they've had to be face up.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's flipped them over and done it again.
And usually what does end up killing them are the stabs to the back.
Yeah, that is true. It can be a number of things. They can either die by the stab. Like I've told you before, you only have to stab a person 3 inches. The knife only has to be 3 inches in order to kill a person. 3 inches or more.
Mm-hmm.
In order to kill a person. Now, that does not mean that you guys go out and find a 3-inch knife to kill a person. I just watch a lot of crime documentaries and watch a lot of prison shows.
Prison.
So.
Don't schmoiter people, please. Don't schmoiter people.
That part,
exactly. But yeah, so that's how Tracy was killed. He dragged her out of the bedroom as well, and then he posed her in the hallway near the stairs and fanned her hair out as well. And then he ended up cleaning her with dish soap as well. And put a blanket or a towel under her hips to almost like raise her pelvic area a little bit higher. So it's more of a like a lewd position, because he like spread her legs open as well. And that's how he posed her. Now, this is wild because the day that he did this, the same day that he did this, he would have been caught. But because the landlord decided to call the cops before going into Manny and Tracy's apartment, he got away. So, oh my God. Anyways, going back to how things are going right now. At this point, the first 3 victims have already been found. Christina Powell and Sonia Larson were both found on the 25th in the morning. They were found around, I think it was like 8 a.m. because that's when their family members came over and called the police to do a welfare check. And Krista Hoyt was found on the 26th when her co-workers decided that since the police weren't going to do the welfare check because they were all at the other crime scene, like it was all hands on deck for this. Like they had, this was such a quiet town. Like Gainesville was one of those sleepy towns where nothing bad ever happened. Like the worst thing that happened there was rape. And I'm not saying that that's not bad, but like they never really ever had murders there until this. And so everybody was there at the original crime scene, which was Christina and Sonia's crime scene. And then they found 12 hours later, Krista Hoyt. Like I said, the co-workers were there. They went behind to her sliding back door, because that's where Danny Rowling had gotten in through. And the male deputy looked in underneath, and that's when he had seen it, so he had to report it. And then on the 28th is when they found Manny and Tracy. And when the landlord opened the door, he had seen a black bag. And that's how they were like, oh my God, the killer is still in there. So they called the cops. But because they did that and they didn't go in there to, I mean, obviously they can't go in there. And it's completely understandable why they didn't go in there. But if they had gone in there, they could have captured the real killer from the very beginning. And the next person that would have been victimized, that did get victimized by Danny, kind of, sort of, by extension, like, if they had just caught him right then and there, the other person wouldn't have been victimized. Now, this whole town was already in shreds. 5 people had been brutally murdered, and these students just didn't know what the hell to do. They were freaking out. They were buying guns. They were buying deadbolts. They were buying mace. Mace had price gouging through the roof. Originally $5, now $25 for a small little can, because these kids were scared to death. They were buying, like I said, brand new locks. They were buying anything to keep them safe. Anything. They were doing mega sleepovers, 20 people at a time. People were sleeping in shifts. Like, one night somebody would be up all night, and then so on, so on. Classes were being canceled. Almost 1,336 students left, and 700 did not come back. And I mean, it sucks, because this little town runs because of the school. Like, it is a college town. And now nobody wanted to, I mean, everybody was locking their doors. People were leaving lights on the entire day. People were sleeping in large groups. Nobody was going out. Businesses were closing at, you know, at 6 p.m. And they just wanted to know who it was. Who was the person that was responsible for these murders? And the cops, like I said, they had never had anything like this happen before. And they knew that it was way above their experiences. So they brought in 4 different people, 4 different departments to help them out. They got help from the Alachua Sheriff's Office. They also got help from, I think it was called, was it Lakeview or something like that? They also got help from the FBI. They got help from Danny's previous residence in Shreveport, because they found out that there had been a very brutal triple murder that had happened in Shreveport, Louisiana. It was a 24-year-old by the name of Julie Grissom. She was a student as well at a community college. She was trying to become a nurse, if I'm correct. And her father had also been killed. He had been shot. Her 8-year-old nephew had been stabbed in the back and killed as well. She had been raped, stabbed. Her nipples had been almost bitten off. And then she was also posed similarly to Sonia Larsen as in she got her legs were kind of pushed off of the bed, you know, hair fanned out. I would also like to let you guys know at this point that pretty much every single female victim had their bodies mutilated in one way, shape, or form. Christina, Sonia, Julie, they all had their nipples either bitten or removed. And Tracy, she had a gash going from her pelvic bone all the way down to her knee because he had literally sliced her. So yeah, like all of this is happening, and like I said, Gainesville is in a world of terror and they just don't know what's going on. And that's when they get the police department, they get a call into Crime Stoppers with the name Ed Humphrey. Edward Humphrey was an 18-year-old boy, a freshman at the University of Florida. He had been living in the same apartment as Tracy and Manny, which is why he was even, you know, kind of like brought into the investigation. And he was manic depressed, possible schizophrenia. He just was not doing very well. He was very mentally ill at that time. And because people were kind of making him out to be a murderer when he wasn't, he ended up fleeing to his grandmother's house because he was kind of tired of the media. Like, this was a media shitstorm. I'm sorry to say it, but it was. As soon as Ed Humphrey's name was out there, there was papers. The newspaper had headlines like, Gainesville Slayer Caught. Investigation on Gainesville Killer is going forward. Ed Humphrey, his face was plastered. And I mean, the year before that, he had been in a horrible car accident that gave him a lot of scars. And that also prompted people to believe that he was a serial killer. Aside from the fact that he also liked knives, and he also had a K-bar knife, and he dressed like he was a part of the military, even though he wasn't. He used to tell people that he was, but I also, like I said, I think it was because he was mentally ill and he wasn't taking his medication. He was also bipolar. So, as said before, he went to his grandmother's house, ended up assaulting her, and that's kind of how the police department was able to bring him in and question him. At this point, they had found out that that the killer had blood type B and that he was a secretor. And I don't know if you know what that means. Okay. From what I've done my research, I've heard that a secretor is a person whose blood type and DNA blood type specifically can be found through saliva and semen. And because Danny Rowling had left semen in two of the crime scenes, they were able to extract his blood type. And so around September 10th or October 10th of 1990, I believe it was September 10th of 1990, they sent in Ed Humphrey's DNA to see if they could be a match. And 7 days later, it came back that it wasn't a match, but because he had assaulted his grandmother, even though his grandmother did drop the charges later on, they kept him behind bars just in case he could possibly have been involved with the murders. Because at this point, they still had not caught the dude, Danny Rowling. But because he had robbed a bank beforehand and they had found his tent and all of these other little places were calling in now to let them know, hey, like, there was this one dude that robbed a Winn-Dixie over here. Hey, like, there's this murder over here. And they kept getting like the same description. They kind of started to gather the information. he was caught because of a robbery that he was committing on September 8th. So on September 8th, he ended up robbing a Winn-Dixie store, and that's how he got caught. But he got caught for robbing the Winn-Dixie store, not for the murders. He would not get caught for the murders until weeks down the line. And the reason he got caught was because this woman by the name of Debbie, yeah, I think that was her name, ended up calling in to let them know that there was this man that might have been a part of the Shreveport murders that told her that he liked to stick knives into people. And so she gave them the name Danny Harold Rowling, and that's kind of when they all just were like, okay, maybe this is our guy. They were able to get a DNA sample from him, and they were able to connect it because he also had the same blood type, and they also found out that he was a secretor. So they had him in jail, and he refused to confess. He was only going to confess if his cellmate was a part of it. Like, if his cellmate would be the messenger. That's the only way that he would confess. So they got the cellmates and him to get into, you know, the interrogation room. And that's kind of how he ended up confessing to the murders. But he didn't. He was still pleading not guilty. So on February 15th, 1994, he finally pled guilty. And the reason that he said that was because he did not want to hear about his own gruesome murders that he created. And because he thought that if he pled guilty, the death sentence would be off the table. But because they found the four aggravating factors, it was a unanimous vote, 12-0, death sentence recommended.
So, is he still sitting in jail?
No.
Was it by lethal injection?
Fire? Yes. Lethal injection. Now, before he did die, he did also try to appeal it. And he got denied. Thank God.
Okay.
Thank freaking God.
I was hoping for a firing squad.
I was honestly hoping for a electric chair.
I was hoping death was more painful, period. And I hope it burns hell.
Did they miss the vein or something? Like, come on, give me something out. Give me something.
Nope. He died by lethal injection. Nothing. He literally was just there. He did look directly into like a couple of the victims' eyes, but the only thing that he really said was that he loved his quote-unquote wife. Now, his quote-unquote wife pisses me the fuck off. I'm not even going to mention her by name. The only thing that I'm going to say about her is that she tried to claim that she was a freelance reporter, but she was also saying that if anybody wanted to talk to Danny, they had to go through her because she had the rights to his story. And when she was confronted about it and said, well, then you're not a freelance writer or reporter, you're just an agent, she freaked the fluff out and started saying, well, I'm not going to answer any more of your questions because I am a reporter. And they're like, well, you're contradicting yourself, because you're saying that you are a reporter, but you're saying that you have sole rights to Danny's story, so that makes you an agent. And she's like, I'm not an agent. And I'm like, oh my God, shut the fuck up. You're stupid. I was so mad at her. And go for it. Go for it.
A dude like that anyway.
She loved him.
Yeah, she was in love with him.
She loved him.
Yeah. You know what this reminds me of? The same thing with the girl who was in love with Ted Bundy. Not Ted Bundy. What's his name? It wasn't Ted. Was it Ted Bundy?
It was probably Ted Bundy.
The movie.
It was Ted Bundy.
Yeah, it was Ted Bundy. The same girl that was in love with Ted Bundy. That's what it reminds me of.
You guys want to know what else she did? She did write a book with him, and she later tried to sue the families because the fam, like, if a person that's in prison makes something, all of the money that they make off of it will go towards the family. That's kind of how it's always been. But because she was co-creator of the book, she was trying to get minimum half of the proceeds.
Okay.
So. But the state was like, no, because you're trying to romanticize the case. You're trying to make it about Danny and not about the victims. And aside from that, why should you get any of the money? Personally, I agree with the state. If she's going to write the book, that's fine. But like,
see, how much money did he owe in restitution? Did you find that out?
Mm-mm.
If he made more than what he owed in restitution, then okay, I could see where she's coming from. But if not, fuck her.
Fuck her. She was just plain rude about it. Saying that she did not want to give the money any, and that she did not want to give them any money at all.
Oh, fuck her. Fuck her.
I hated her. Oh my God. That's why I wasn't even going to talk about her, because she pissed me off. But yeah.
Fuck her.
Ed Humphrey did end up getting out of jail after 22 months, and he got his degree.
They wrongfully held him there for
22 months. In a mental institution so he could get help.
He was doing fine before all them people came up and started bullying him.
I know.
He was doing fine. He was minding his own business before all them people came up and was bullying him, making him out to be the bad guy.
I think I'm going to kill your soul just a tiny bit more by saying that his grandmother died before he was even completely exonerated.
Poe Granny. May God rest her soul.
But our story does not end there, because I am a soul-crushing bitch. And there's one story left that also has a lot to do with this case. One of the siblings of Sonia Larson, his wife was brutally murdered by another serial killer only 7 years after Sonia had been murdered by Danny. Oh, Lord, indeed, babies. Oh, Lord.
What was his name? The serial killer that killed him or her?
I think it was Jesse or Jacob Hughes. Something like that. I have it right here.
He didn't have a name? Like the Gainesville killer, the Golden State killer?
I did not look into him because the fact that he had lost two of the most important women of his life just complete. Actually, I think that was his first victim. That was his first victim.
So he was a copycat killer.
Here you go. If you want to see that. But yeah, so her name was Carla Larson, and she was driving to a supermarket, and she was approached by a complete stranger, and the stranger ended up taking her to a remote area where he strangled her. I'm not sure he raped her. I just know that he strangled her And they found her, I believe they found her the same day, a couple of hours later. But, yeah. That's kind of the story of the Gainesville Ripper. There is a couple of good things that have come out of this. And I know nothing great will ever come out of these type of things, but the University of Florida does have a scholarship in the name of the five victims that lost their lives. And they have a little memorial type thing, painting, super close to the school where it says, remember 1990 with a big red heart. And it says the names of all of the five victims. And the families, they have get-togethers and they reminisce about the victims. And they have each other. So, you know, we can always be grateful for that. The brother of Sonia Larson still has his little girl by the name of Jessica. They, of course, she's a lot older now. And that's kind of been his reason for living. And the last I checked, he had a new girlfriend. So he seems to be doing a lot better, which is always really nice to hear. And I don't think there's anything else that I'm missing. Ooh, but before I go, I have a question for you guys. I'm talking about you guys and you guys in there. The Gainesville Ripper inspired a very iconic movie. Do you guys want to take a gander at what it is before I say what it is? Here's some of the similarities. Whole town in horror. They're grief-stricken. Two people have been murdered. Who was the killer?
Halloween.
No, no, no. Not Halloween.
Friday the 13th.
Not Friday the 13th.
Scream.
Yes.
Scream.
Scream. It was Scream was inspired by this movie. Now, a lot of people are saying, well, I really don't see the similarities. But frankly, I kind of do. Now, think about it. Cotton Weary was the person that was kind of like the red herring to begin with. Ed Humphrey. There we go. We got one similarity. First two kills of the movie involved somebody getting gutted. Someone got gutted. There we go. There was also one male and he was a football player. Steve Orth was a football player. Manny Tabota was a football player. Everybody that was unfortunately murdered was a short, very petite, beautiful brunette, Sydney Prescott. Petite brunette in her teens. She was only 16 when this happened to her. 16, 17. And the youngest one was 17 years old. So you can't tell me that there's no more similarities. The media frenzy, the fact that it happened at a college and the second one is at a college. The whole town.
The second one also kind of based on the other killer who killed the wife of one of the other victims.
Oh my God, you're right. You're right. Yes. Yes. So all of these similarities. And everybody's just like, there's nothing really similar. And I'm like, no, I see them. I see them. But yeah. Next week's case is also going to be slightly linked to this one. So, yeah. I hope you guys are ready. Because, ooh, that next one was horrendous. These next three cases will be linked in one way, shape, or form, either by movie, by a person doing it, or something. But just so you guys know, And I'm telling them all in chronological order. So if they don't really make sense right now, they will at the very end. And you guys will understand why. Oh my God, this man and the horrors that he... Anyways, you guys know where to follow us. Spotify.
TikTok. King Maze, 8296.
I'm not going to plug my stuff, but I'll see you guys later. Okay, bye. Welcome to the dark web. On today's little mini-sode, we are going to be talking about tips and tricks that you guys can take to make your life a tiny bit easier. There is, and safer, there is a podcast that I love to listen to by the name of Crime Junkie. I'm sure you have heard of it. And if you have, hello, you want to be friends? I know you're out there. And I want to be your friend if you love true crime as much as I do. But Crime Junkie once told me, make yourself a if I go missing folder. I know it sounds terrifying to think about that kind of shit. It puts you in a paranoid mind, but it's actually quite easy. It's the same thing as having the emergency phone numbers, all of your passwords, and your PIN put on a piece of paper. That's all you need. And it's going to be amazing because if you ever do go missing, and hopefully you never do, your friends and family will have a little file that they can look into where it'll have your passwords for everything that you need, your bank, your birth certificate, your social security card. It'll be on there like a photocopy, and it'll have emergency contacts. And it also works out because now you have a place where if you forget your Facebook password, you can be like, wait, don't I have an if I go missing folder? I mean, my password went missing. Obviously, it's I can use it because something's gone missing. See? And now it's like killing two birds with one stone. Ooh. I don't think that was the appropriate joke, but let's keep going. That was my first tip. Like Crime Junkie said, please get yourself an if I go missing folder. It could potentially save your life. The second one that I have is, if you are going to go out and drink, know your limits and understand that if you left something unattended and you didn't notice, it doesn't matter how much it costs, your life is priceless, okay? You are priceless. We can't get you back, but you can sure as hell let go of a shot of vodka, okay? Please stay safe. Travel in groups, and no matter what happens, like they always say in Morbid, keep your windows closed, okay? Morbid is another really good true crime podcast. Go ahead and check it out. I dare you. They're really amazing. They always say, people that sleep with the windows open are the ones that want to die, apparently. And if you want to survive the night, don't sleep on the couch, just like they always say. So thank you, girls. Thank you so much. And as always, stay safe. Speak up if you see something going on. Don't just let it slide, okay? Love you. Have a good day. Have a good day. Have a good day.